Hello and welcome to The Fairy Folk, the podcast that takes you on a magical tour to discover the myth and the magic of the United Kingdom without leaving the comfort of your own home. Are you ready for another virtual adventure? Today we're travelling to the county of Somerset, famous for its four rolling hills, the Mendips, Quantox, Blackdown Hills and Exmoor National Park. Somerset is home to many famous historic sites like the City of Bath, named after the Roman public baths there, and the stunning caves at Cheddar Gorge. And you might be familiar with a few people who have called Somerset home over the years, such as author Jane Austen, Game of Thrones actress Maisie Williams, and comedian John Cleese. And although you might not know it from my accent, Somerset is also my home county, so I'm very excited to share with you some of my favourite myths and legends from this part of the UK. In this episode, we will meet the Fairy King, Gwynap Nedd, who resides on the top of Glastonbury Tor, and learn all about the mysterious Stanton Drew Standing Stones. For our first Somerset story, we will need to travel over to the town of Glastonbury. You've likely heard the name before, as Glastonbury is not only the home of the famous music festival, it is also regarded as being the location of the mystical Isle of Avalon from Arthurian legend. Surrounded by countryside, the town is full of interesting and unique shops that reflect the New Age and neo-pagan communities that are based there. But I hope you brought some sturdy footwear with you, because we must travel on through the town centre and up the steep slope of Glastonbury Tor. Tor is an old word of Celtic origin, meaning hill, and Glastonbury Tor is a hill that protrudes from the Somerset levels around it. It is a stunning feature of the area and can be seen from 20 miles away. The roofless tower that sits atop it is the ruin of St Michael's Church, the second to be built on that site, and was demolished during 1539's dissolution of the monasteries. The Tor is a sacred site, and many people make the pilgrimage to the famous landmark from all around, as it has strong links to many religions and ancient legends. You can also see the image of the Tor on the Clark's Shoe Manufacturer's quality stamp, as the Tor is visible from their headquarters in the neighbouring village of Street. From here, we can look down at the beautiful countryside below, with trees and lush green spaces sprawling towards the horizon from miles around. Enjoy the view as we begin our first tale, the story of St Cothleen and the King of the Fairies. St Cothleen was an abbot who was based in the magnificent abbey in Glastonbury. He had spent much of his life travelling, but eventually he had decided that he wished for a more peaceful, steady life. And so he set up a humble dwelling on the side of Glastonbury Tor, perhaps near to the sacred waters of the Holy Chalice Well. Cothleen was enjoying his new life in the beautiful Somerset countryside. But as time passed, he began to overhear talk that concerned him greatly. He had heard the name before, discussed only in whispers. But today he overheard two men brazenly talking about the Fairy King, Gwynap Nedd. It had been a long time since he'd heard talk of such a creature. And after having dedicated much of his life opposing old pagan beliefs, to hear such talk of a fairy right outside his cell of all places was an insult. The men seemed to hold the creature in such high regard, to worship him even. This was far too much for the abbot to handle. He stormed out of his cell and confronted the men. Who were they to talk of such a demon? The men warned Cothleen, saying that he should know better than to talk ill of the Fairy King. But Cothleen was unimpressed and shooed the men away. Time passed and he thought no more of the Fairy King. That was, of course, until later, when a loud knock reverberated around his cell. He answered the door, and before him stood a fair-haired man, his hands covered by what looked like two mauve foxglove bells. The visitor confirmed that he was at the dwelling of Cothleen, and then proceeded to recite a message. Cothleen's presence was requested at the top of Glastonbury Tor by the order of Gwynap Nedd, King of Annwn and the Fairies. Cothleen shook his head. He would not humour this unwanted visitor. Word of his encounter with the men before must have spread, and now they had sent another one of their comrades to mock him. Well, he would not indulge them in their frivolous pranks. The door closed on the fair-haired man. But the next day, there was another knock at the door. The same man had returned, and the message was repeated. Again, Cothleen shook his head and sent the man on his way. But it was the third visit from the fair-haired man that shook the abbot to his core. The messenger had returned, but his tone had completely changed. This was no longer a kind request, but an order. If Cothleen did not meet with the king, terrible things would happen. The abbot's eyes widened, a fear sparked within him. And once the messenger had departed, He filled a flask with holy water and immediately began the steep trek up to the Tor. It appeared to him at first in a haze, but soon as he climbed higher and higher, the glistening turrets and glass-like exterior of the fairy castle appeared to him in the distance. Sweet music filled the air, and the men and women of the court stood to greet him in the castle's grounds, dressed in burning red and glistening blue. Their faces melded into an enchanting vision of eternal youth. White horses brayed beside them, and dancing minstrels performed impossible feats. But there, at the top of the castle, waving to him like an old friend, was a man who beckoned for the abbot to enter. Cuthlin marched on through the castle door, chanting to himself softly to keep his mind clear of the illusions of this fairy enchantment. The king sat comfortably on his golden throne. He greeted Cuthlin with a smile, welcoming him like an old friend. He encouraged his guest to make himself comfortable. Cuthlin clutched the flask of holy water beneath his habit a little tighter. The king remarked that Cuthlin must be hungry after his long trek. Perhaps he would care to join him for a feast. Whatever delicacies his heart desired, the king could have prepared for him. Succulent meats, plump fruits, fine wine. Anything could be conjured up right away. But Cuthlin knew better than to accept the forbidden fruit of the fairy world, and he remarked that he would not dare to eat even the leaves off the trees. No matter, thought the king. He began to boast of his riches and the stunning red and blue garments that were sported so elegantly by the men and women of the court. The warmth of the reds and the icy tinge of the blue was almost intoxicating enough to send feverish flushes through the senses, even from Cuthlin's distance. But he was under no illusion of the significance of this fairy dress, for the red symbolized the wretched heat and the blue the dismal cold of hell. And with that declaration, he flung his holy water at the king and his fairy court. They screeched and squealed and then melted into nothingness. The court, the king, and the castle itself. The frivolity of the fairy court was no more, thought Cuthlin, as he stood alone upon the barren, wind-stricken Tor. So that was the story of St. Cuthlin and the King of the Fairies. My retelling was based on the version told in Pagan Portals by Daniel Forrest, as well as the version in New Light on the Ancient Mystery of Glastonbury by John Michel. But the story itself is thought to have originated from the 16th century manuscript, The Life of St. Cuthlin, which is spelt C-O-L-L-E-N. There is debate on whether this tale originates from Glastonbury, or Wales, where the Welsh abbot originally came from. However, there does appear to be evidence that Cuthlin was an abbot of Glastonbury Abbey in the 7th century, so his connections with the town are clear in a historical sense. Glastonbury Tor takes a prominent role in several other myths. One of the most famous claims that King Arthur's final resting place is within a cave in the hill. Danny Forrest proposes an interesting theory and suggests that perhaps Cuthlin didn't destroy the fairy castle at all and was simply banished from it for his disrespect, as it is commonly noted that fairies have the power to only appear to humans of their choosing. This is slightly reminiscent of the fairy ointment tale, which we last came across on our trip to Nithsdale in Scotland, in which the fairy realm is only visible to the woman when she is allowed to put the ointment into her eyes. Another traditional fairy theme that appears in the story is the apparent danger that comes from a human sampling food from the fairy realm, which is a motif that often appears in similar folk tales, and can perhaps be linked to the pomegranate seeds in Greek mythology that bind Persephone to the underworld. This is also a good example of how Christianity began to overlap with, absorb, and perhaps even vilify traditional pagan deities, traditions, and beliefs. So, what do you think? Did Gwyn ap Nudd truly hold his fairy court atop Glastonbury Tor? Or was this all a religious fable, warning against the pagan beliefs of the past? I'll let you decide. I started a tradition several years ago of visiting Glastonbury Tor to welcome in the autumn season and get a final glimpse of the green trees before they begin their autumnal transformation. It really is a beautiful place, and definitely has a kind of magic and spiritualism about it. The climb to the top of the Tor is also really enjoyable, and often there are several grazing sheep to keep you company on the way. If you'd like to take a break from our virtual trip and visit the Tor for yourself, then you can take the signposted route from Glastonbury High Street up past the ancient Chalice Well and onto the top of the Tor, where Gwyn ap Nudd is supposed to reside. The area is a National Trust site, but is free to visit. Now, for our next story, we will need to travel around 20 miles up north of Glastonbury to the village of Stanton Drew. Stanton Drew is a small Somerset village in the Chew Valley, not far from the outskirts of the city of Bristol. But it is most famous for its three ancient standing stone circles. The largest of the stone circles, the Great Circle, is in fact one of the largest in the country and reaches around 113 metres across. The stones stand majestically, casting great shadows down onto the grass below. Stanton Drew is also home to two smaller circles in the northeast and southwest, and three additional stones that are currently housed in the garden of the village pub. The origins of the stones are largely unknown, particularly as they are yet to be excavated, and so it is the job of myth and folklore to fill in the blanks. One summer's evening, a lavish wedding party was coming to its end. The ceremony had long been and gone, and bride, groom, and guests had retired to a field beside the church for the afternoon's festivities. The weather had been perfect, and the music lively, and now the drink flowed freely. The musicians played waltz after jig, even as the warm sun began its slow descent. Flutes, drums, and fiddles echoed around the site as the guests spun one another carelessly to and fro upon the grass. All was well. Until, that was, the very last of the sun's light had become a mere slither amongst the navy blue of the incoming night. Most of the other musicians had packed up and left by now, but the fiddler had done his best to keep the party going. However, the time had finally come for him to put away his bow, as he reminded the revellers that tomorrow was the Sabbath day. It would not be proper for him to continue working into the holy day of rest, and so he bowed and began to turn away. But the bride grabbed him by the arm, refusing to accept that he wanted to leave so soon. The day had been perfect up until now, and her guests still wanted to dance. Couldn't he keep the music going, just for a little while? The man shook his head. Not even an offer of several shining gold coins could tempt the devout fiddler to stay, and so he began his journey home. As the fiddler made his way across the field, he noticed a man dressed all in black, walking in the opposite direction. He paused and watched as the man approached the wedding party, fiddle case in hand. By now, the guests were restless, and the bride was still angry about the sudden departure of her final musician. But then, the handsome stranger appeared. He calmly walked up to the bride and smiled at her sweetly, revealing the fiddle case he so conveniently clutched in his hand. He told the wedding party that he would be happy to continue playing for them, and they could dance for as long as they liked, into the morning hours. He even demonstrated his talent, delicately playing a snippet of a song, the likes of which the villagers had never heard. The bride was ecstatic, and the dance continued. The first fiddler could hear the drone of the new music and see the moving bodies of the wedding party, even from afar. There was something strange about the melodies, echoing for miles around. He shook his head and ducked into the shadows. Perhaps he wouldn't hurry home just yet. And so the bride, groom, and their guests danced and danced. They danced for hours on end, forwards and back and side to side. And again, they jigged and they jived until their limbs ached and their feet buckled. They danced and they danced until they begged to dance no more. But somehow they could not. They were firmly under the spell of the mysterious fiddler. They had wanted to dance until dawn, and now they would, without interruption. The original fiddler watched transfixed, and he felt the strange sensation of his arm and leg beginning to freeze in place. He could not leave now, even if he wanted to. Eventually, the sun rose mercifully over the horizon, and the dark cloaked figure put down his bow and returned the instrument to its case. The dance was well and truly over, but there was no applause or even a sigh of relief, for each and every member of the wedding party had been turned to stone. The fiddler removed his hat and bowed low, just long enough to reveal the two horns that were nestled between the dark strands of his curly hair. And so the devil went on his way. And the original fiddler, realizing that he had finally regained the feeling in his frozen hand and foot, hurried back to the village to retell the story of the ill-fated wedding party. So that was the wedding party, which gives us a very interesting and quite tragic backstory to the origin of the Stanton Drew Standing Stones. This retelling was an amalgamation of the versions in Legends of Somerset by Sally Jones and Folklore of Somerset by Alan Holt. The English Heritage website was also a great source for some of the research that you've already heard and are just about to hear in a moment. I should also mention that there is another brilliant retelling of this story on the Tales of the British Isles podcast, which is one of my favourite folklore podcasts. They've created a whole episode on standing stones and their myths relatively recently, So if you've enjoyed the Stanton Drew story, then definitely check it out. Versions of this story differ slightly. One suggests that the story takes place in August rather than Midsummer. The date change to Midsummer might be a connection with the Christian St. John's Eve celebration. The tale also sometimes ends with the devil promising to play for the wedding party again, and bride, groom, and wedding guests are simply frozen in their stony forms, awaiting his return. There are also a few other folk tales that are connected to the standing stones. One says that after midnight, on the sixth day, after a full moon, the stones come to life and head towards the river to take a drink, which is certainly quite a strange image. And another claims that anyone that tries to count the stones will befall a nasty fate. And because of that, I will not tell you how many stones there are believed to be in the Great Circle, but don't hold me accountable if your curiosity gets the better of you. The wedding party tale undoubtedly has its roots in Christianity, warning of what might happen if a person was to disrespect the Sabbath day, the Christian day of rest. After all, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy, is one of the Ten Commandments. Historically, the stones are believed to be Neolithic monuments, and the site would have also featured large wooden posts, which have since been lost to time. Archaeologists are yet to determine what these kinds of structures would have been used for, but they may have been buildings, a platform of some kind, or a memorial or ceremonial site. So, what do you think? Are the Stanton Drew standing stones a great example of Neolithic architecture, or are they really the stony forms of the cursed wedding party? I think I'll leave that one for you to decide. Both of our tales today have had their roots in Christianity, with stories that feature warnings of what might happen if you refuse to heed the warnings in biblical teachings. It's interesting how much there is still to learn about these kinds of standing stones, but all we can do is hope that more historical research reveals some of these ancient secrets, and perhaps with it, more folk tales and legends. Once things are a little more back to normal in the UK, then perhaps you'll be all ready for a real-life trip to see these magnificent standing stones for yourself. In which case, Stanton Drew is relatively easy to get to from nearby city Bristol, which is very well linked by rail to other parts of Somerset and the country in general. Then Stanton Drew is about a 20 minutes or so drive away from the city centre. You could also take a couple of buses there, but it will take you significantly longer. The landowner does charge to access the main site, and entry is of course at their discretion. Perhaps you could settle for a drink in the garden of the Druid's Arms pub, where three separate stones are located. And those are interestingly known as the parson, the bride, and the bridegroom. If you're lucky enough to have visited any of the places that we've mentioned on the podcast so far, then it would be great to hear from you. Why not share your stories and photographs with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, @thefairy_folk. And once again, that's fairy spelled F-A-E-R-I-E. If you're enjoying the podcast, then it would be great if you could let us know by leaving a review. And don't forget to tell us where you think we should travel together next. Thank you so much for visiting Somerset with me today. This part of the country holds such a special place in my heart. It's where I grew up and where my family still live to this day. So it was really lovely to share some local stories with you. I know I will certainly be visiting Somerset again soon, but I hope that you will too. Anyway, we've come to the end of our journey and it's time for me to leave you. So until next time. The music featured in today's episode was Galway from Incompetech by Kevin McLeod. Sound effects were from freesounds.org.